Previously on Ill-Equipped History, the Lewis and Clark Expedition! Also called the Corps of Discovery. Thomas Jefferson is the third president of the United States, and he has his eyes set west. I'm gonna assign my very trustworthy secretary, Meriwether Lewis. And Lewis was like, hell yeah. But I'm not doing it alone. I'm gonna call my buddy, William Clark.
They were going in blind.
And now they're off. In the late summer of 1804, a lot of the men were starting to get really sick, especially Sergeant Charles Floyd. He did eventually pass away. In February of 1805, he was asked to come to the home of a young Shoshone woman who was having difficulty delivering her baby. This is where they meet Sacagawea. It took them a month to get around these waterfalls. Sacagawea was like, I recognize that mountain right there. They are starting to get closer to the Continental Divide. And Lewis is like, by George, we've done it. We were almost to the Pacific Ocean. We're gonna get there soon. And he sees more mountains and an elderly guide they called Old Toby.
Old Toby?
And on November 18th, 1805, Clark traveled to the top of a big hill, and there he saw the Pacific Ocean. Welcome to Ill-Equipped History.
That was a beautiful serenade right there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is a podcast where two crazy ladies talk about events in history. I'm Morgan, joined by my wackadoodle co-host, Emily.
Hello.
My brain.
I'm a wackadoodle.
You are a wackadoodle, and my brain is going like faster than the speed of light for some reason. I don't know what's going on.
Zoom, 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 zoom.
That's exactly what it's doing.
Do you want to hear what happened to me today and what my wackadoodle brain did?
Please tell me what you did today.
So, Lou and I went to lunch. We got some sushi. Then we got some boba tea. Mm. It was like a great mom's lunch out kind of a thing because my kids were at school. She got a sitter for the little baby.
Yeah.
And so we're standing at my car outside of the sushi restaurant, and my driver's side door is open, so my car's unlocked, and I'm talking to her because it takes us 10 minutes to leave each other, sometimes 20 to 30, because we just continue to chat, because that's what you do. And so we're chatting, and Lou's facing the restaurant, and I'm facing, the street, but we're facing each other. She looks over my shoulder, and her eyes get as wide as saucers. And then I hear this guy yell, "You dumb bitch, you almost hit me." And, okay, Lou's, this is Lou's account of the what happened. So the guy's walking out of a restaurant. The woman is driving in a car. He steps out into the road, and yes, pedestrians have the right of way, but he just blindly stepped out into the road, and she almost hit him with the car.
Okay.
So then he starts calling her every name under the sun, and then she puts her car in park, and he runs to his truck. Like, she's ready to fight this motherfucker. And he's just like, okay, just leave me alone. All of this is happening. One parking spot beside me, on my passenger side. They're right there. The lady's car is blocking my car. So Lou and I are like, is somebody going to pull a gun? Because it is getting heated.
Yeah.
So we're trying to leave. I'm trying to leave. I can't get in. Like, I don't know why when I panicked. I'm still laughing at myself. I locked my car. And it was so loud that it made it awkward.
You were inside the car, right?
No! It honked! We were still standing outside the car with my driver's side door open, and I got nervous! And I honked it! And they, There was a silence. There was an audible silence from everyone. And then everyone left. And Lou was like, I gotta go. And she just left. And then I just got in the car. It made it so awkward. It's like they're yelling and then they hear click, click. Like honks.
I'm just imagining both of you just like deer in headlights, like staring straight ahead. And then a boop, boop. Good job at diffusing the tension, Emily.
Why? I like this. In the threat of danger, I just like getting nervous.
And just lock your door with your door open and you standing outside of it.
She did like pull off and like take a picture of his truck, but then like we left and that was that. Everyone left. Oh. I guess they realized that, hey, there's people around and we're like in public. I don't know. Oh, it's so funny.
That is really funny. Good job.
Thanks. I accidentally diffused a situation.
Yes. Yes. Ah, oh, that's funny. So, I actually have something to admit to our lovely listeners about the last two episodes that aired last week and this week. So originally,
see what happened was.
Well, what happened was, when we were first recording part one, it was originally not going to be a two-parter, and my headphones died in the middle of us recording, and I couldn't get them to like plug up and charge like while I was recording. So we're like, okay, let's try again later and we'll finish up. And then we tried a few days later to finish recording. And we were almost done. I had like a few bullet points left. And then Emily goes, Morgan, my Audacity didn't record. And it was almost an hour.
It completely, like, all the Audacity tabs I had just completely shut down. And I don't know at what point it did that, but it only recorded, like, 5 seconds. It recorded me saying, okay, we're recording. And then it stopped.
And then I recorded by myself for, like, almost an hour. And then we're like, okay, now we got to start over. And then as time is getting closer and then us realizing it was going to be like a 3-hour episode, we're like, okay, let's split this into two parts.
Yeah.
And we'll just figure it out. So that's why there's not a skit today, because my brain literally could not come up with a skit. It had a hard enough time with the first skit I wrote. So like, we're just going to review and jump on in.
Past.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, for those who, maybe like me, who within a week, my brain forgets shit. Let's give a rough overview.
Yes.
So Lewis and Clark leave from St. Louis. They go up the Columbia?
The Missouri River.
Missouri. Yeah. See, I don't.
Pretty sure it was the Missouri. Let me double make sure. Yeah. The Missouri River.
They did hit was it the Columbia?
Yeah. After.
They did hit it eventually. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, after they crossed the Rocky Mountains, they encountered several different tribes, native tribes, on their way. Some were very hospitable and friendly, and they made great, like, homes there briefly, and others were a little bit more hostile.
Yes.
You know, things happen. It took them over a year to get from St. Louis to the Pacific Ocean, and they were navigating about half of their journey was mapped by, like, fur traders and the French that had been in the area. But another half of their journey was completely unmapped.
Yeah.
So they did the damn thing.
Yeah, they did the damn thing. And so, starting off, what time of year are we looking at when they arrived at the Pacific?
It is November of 1805.
Okay, so we're in November. Damn.
Yes. And they had left in, I believe it was April of 1804, is when they left St. Louis.
Wow.
So yeah, it's been a while. And then with them, it's Lewis and Clark. Lewis worked for Thomas Jefferson. He was his personal secretary. And then Clark was Lewis's really good friend, who's also like a survivalist, a frontiersman. They had a group of about 40-ish men with them, including Clark's enslaved man, York. Well, they got to Fort... Let me make sure I'm pronouncing this right. They got to Fort Mandans, and they picked up a man named Charbonneau and his wife, Sacagawea, and the bebe.
The little bebe.
Little bebe. And so Charbonneau, Sacagawea, and Jean-Baptiste, or Little Pomp, traveled with them to the Pacific. And then about half, like a dozen men went back to D.C. to drop off what they had collected so far. Because this was also a scientific expedition, and they were collecting
not
samples.
Not just mapping.
Right. They were collecting samples, animals, plants. They were document, like very extensive details about everything they encountered every day.
Yeah.
So, do we think we're caught up to speed?
I think we're caught up to speed, yeah.
So... where we left off, it again, it's November. They're in, like, the Oregon area. So, and Oregon is, like, a rainforest. Like, that, the Pacific Northwest is a rainforest. So, they went from, like, the Midwest across the Great Plains, over the Rocky Mountains, in a desert climate, and now they're in a rainforest.
Good Lord.
And it is raining so hard constantly. Right before they found the... Pacific Ocean, they were stuck from the rain for like a week. Their clothes were like literally falling off of them. They were so rotten and waterlogged. Ugh. They had no shelter left. But they find the Pacific Ocean and they collect their samples and write their notes and stuff. And they're like, okay, now what are we going to do? We have a choice to make. And this is what the skit in part one was about. So on November 24th, Lewis and Clark gather their men around and they say, okay, we have a few different choices to make now that we're here. Like, we traveled, Clark estimated they had traveled about 4,162 miles from St. Louis. Like, it's November. They're not making it back home in like a month. They got to wait out the winter somehow. Yes. So their choices were, they had four choices. They could stay where they were on the coast and hope to see a ship and trade with them and then send at least send one person back to D.C. with the journals and some more of the specimens they had collected. They could stay on the north side of the Columbia River near the Chinook tribe. That was a little risky because the tribes there charge like exorbitant prices for goods.
Yeah.
And they didn't really have a lot left at this point. They could stay on the south side of the Columbia River near the Clatsop tribe. And the Clatsop tribe were very welcoming. And they're like, hey, we've got a ton of elk you can hunt.
Yeah.
There's woods that you can build shelters. And, you know, you'll have everything you need to live. Or they could head back up to the Nimiipuu tribes, which was back up the Columbia River. And that's more desert area. But it would be dry.
Yeah.
So instead of Lewis and Clark they were the captains of this expedition. They were the leaders, but they wanted everyone to have an equal voice. So they put the choice up to a vote where each crew member voted.
I love that.
On this decision, including York and Sacagawea.
I love that.
Yeah. And the documentary made a big point to say this was a truly American moment. There was democracy with people who weren't even represented until like 100 years later, as far as voting went.
Yeah, I mean, this is their survival. And Lewis and Clark really took that seriously and wanted them to have a say in their chances of surviving the winter like this.
Absolutely. Right. This wasn't the first time they had put things up to a vote. And the last time that happened, Lewis and Clark did make an executive decision that turned out to be the right decision. But this time they're like, it's y'all's lives. Y'all decide. So the group decided to head south where the Clatsop tribe was. They would wait out the winter there because there was plenty of meat for hunting. Because we've established these men, they cannot survive on fish, apparently.
No, they need their red meat. Oh my God. Give these men the red meat.
Yes. So that was her plan. And meanwhile, so while they're making this decision in November of 1805, Thomas Jefferson, who is the president of the United States at the time, was meeting with delegates from the Oto, Akira, and Yankton Sioux tribes, who had encountered the expedition a year prior. Jefferson thanked all of them for their help, for supporting Lewis and Clark in their expedition on their way, and said he hoped, quote, that we may all live together as one household. Very big dreams.
Big ambitions. Yeah.
Yeah. And no one knew what had become of the expedition. It's not like they could call or even send a telegram or a letter. They couldn't even send a letter back. No one had any idea. They might as well have been in outer space.
That's terrifying to think about.
Mm-hmm. And they were on the same continent. Like, they were just in, like, Oregon. But there was no... They might as well have been on the moon.
It's just Oregon.
Yeah. Because no one had heard from them since April of the previous year when they left Fort Mandan.
God, that is so stressful.
Yeah. So it was May, June, July, August, September, October. 7 months since anyone had heard from them. No one even knew if they were still alive or not.
That, like, just the thought of not being able, like, you could die and no one would know where you were.
Mm-mm.
You would basically fall off the planet.
Yeah, and it's not like anyone would know where to find you either.
No, they wouldn't even have a clue.
You could be in the Rockies. You could be in Canada. Like, you could have fallen prey to an aggressive native tribe. Like, there's no telling.
They really put their lives on the line for exploration on this.
They really did.
Only lost one person so far in the story,
mm-hmm.
that is incredible.
Yeah.
What the
fuck? It's really wild to think about.
That's so wild.
So they ended up building another fort named Fort Clatsop after the local tribe near what's now present day Astoria, Oregon.
Okay.
They built like a pretty sturdy wooden fort. The captains handed out the last of their tobacco rations to those that used tobacco. Right. And to everyone else that didn't use tobacco, they handed out silk handkerchiefs as Christmas presents.
Well, that's really nice.
Yeah. And they had no more booze because they drank it all on July 4th. So this is what we got.
Question.
Yeah.
Is anything left of that fort? Do you know?
I have no clue.
There is a Lewis and Clark National Historical Park.
Mm-hmm.
I just looked up Astoria, Oregon, and that, like, it was right there. So,
from what the documentary said, and I'll get into it a little bit later, but there's almost no physical evidence left of their expedition. So I don't know if any of the forts still remain. It was over 200 years ago, and it was just wood. And especially Fort Clatsop, it just rains constantly. So I don't know if there's any more evidence of the fort.
There is. They have built a replica in Astoria. Okay. So if anybody wants to go, it's there. There's a replica.
There you go.
Yeah.
They probably use the replica in the documentary.
Well, that's, yeah, probably. I mean, that's
because they had like
reenactments
and stuff.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah.
I need to watch that documentary. That's what they did with Fort Loudoun is, you know, when they built the dam and they pretty much flooded the old site and stuff, like they raised the land up and it's just like built, you know, however many feet now above the original site. The original site's now underground and it's like above. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So while they were at Fort Clatsop, it rained every day.
Oh, God.
For 4 months. I think the documentary said it only didn't rain for like 4 days.
What the hell?
It rained almost every single day. And all they had to eat was elk for breakfast, lunch, dinner. No salt.
You ask for red meat, you're gonna get
red meat. they were able to trade occasionally with the local Clatsop tribe for some salmon, some roots, but really it was just elk. But the men honestly like stayed in relatively good spirits. Like it was hard for sure, but they were just like, okay, we just gotta wait out this winter and then we can go home.
Well, it was better than eating all that salmon where they nearly died from just salmon.
I know. And all the roots and...
it was wild.
And so while they were there, they made candles from like the rendered fat from the elk.
Right.
They boiled ocean water for salt. Like they had a whole operation. They made like 20 gallons of salt.
Why does anybody need 20 gallons of salt?
Probably for trade, because they're like, we have nothing left to trade, so maybe we can trade for salt. I don't know.
They're putting so much salt on that red meat, they're pickling themselves. They're just...
yeah, right.
Just for flavor.
Yes. And they made leather out of all the elk hide.
Oh, at least they're putting it to good use.
They are. Like, they're making new clothes for themselves, because, again, like, their clothes basically rotted away.
Yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned this, but when they were... having to circumvent all those waterfalls, and it took like a month. They were walking over like cactus and prickly pears, and they had to replace their shoes like every 2 days because they were just falling apart.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it was really bad. So they were like stocking up on leather and everything they would need to survive the trip back. So Clark was, while like they were waiting out, Clark was like finishing up his cartography.
Mm-hmm.
Their travels. And he estimated they had traveled, like I said earlier, 4,162 miles. He was only off by 40 miles.
What the fuck?
He didn't have GPS. He didn't have a map.
He didn't even have the map. Like, he barely had a compass.
Yeah. I'm sure he had like sextants and gyroscopes and all that, but still, like, in the documentary, one of the historians said, by dead reckoning, he was only off by 40 miles.
What a mathematician. I mean, how, like, I could not tell you how far a mile is.
Mm-mm.
Using my eyeball.
Nope.
I get lost in the town I grew up in. Like, I can't.
Yeah. I thought that was extremely impressive.
That's so cool. That's very impressive.
And also, while Clark is doing his thing, Lewis is going back and getting into more detail on the plants and animals they had encountered. On their trip, they discovered 122 new animal species and 178 new plant species that had never been documented before.
Think of how mind-blowing it is. Like, going onto an alien planet that... you're traveling through this and you're seeing shit you have never seen before in your life. You did not know existed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a cactus to someone from the East Coast is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
If they didn't know that that was a thing.
Or like even just thinking about like buffalo or prairie dogs.
Yeah.
Or
anything.
Like all the... I don't know what I know. Reptiles are more like in the desert, like the Death Valley. But I'm sure they encountered like crazy amounts of wildlife. Well, yeah, 122 new animal species. So, time to go home.
Let's turn this car around.
Yep, let's go back. On March 16th, 1806, Lewis cataloged everything they had left for trade. And everything they had left could fit into two handkerchiefs.
Don't like that.
Yeah. And they encountered several tribes on the way there. Like many, many, many. More than I described in my retelling. Like all throughout their journey. But they did have a lot of lead and powder left in rifles. Okay. And they had paper and ink. So that was really all they had left. And
that's all you need.
The 4 months between November and March, while they were still close to the Columbia River. They weren't right on the coast, but they were still close enough that every single day they looked for a trading vessel of some kind. Not one showed up in like 5 months. Not a single trading vessel showed up.
I mean, where would the trading vessel, like, was it common for them to go to that side of the ocean? Like, where...
I'm not sure. I know it did happen because the Western U.S. had been mapped, like, up to 100 miles. Because, like, Mount Hood had been discovered.
Right.
There was trade with the tribes in the area. Like, the tribes all had, like, European goods, like hats and rifles and stuff like that. So there was trade that did happen in that area, but it may just not have happened in like the cold winter months.
Right.
So they're like, all right, well, we tried. We're just going to start going back home. So by the end of March, they started getting ready to make the trek back home. So they get back on the Columbia. And it's much harder this time because now they're going against the current. And the river is right. flowing into the ocean. So there's a very strong current. They're having to go against like the tidal current and all that. So it's very, very slow going. And food was very difficult to come by. So they are going back through the Chinook tribe territory. Mm-hmm. They're having to trade for goods. And things were extremely expensive. They could barely afford anything. And they reported that some of the people there were stealing from them, like out of their hands. And it got so bad that apparently, this isn't funny, but Lewis like slapped some boys or some men, which was very against his character.
Right.
Like Lewis was not an aggressive person.
His fight or flight has been kicked in for months at this point. Like, stop stealing from the guy.
Well, Lewis already, like we talked about in the last episode, he really struggled with his mental health.
Right.
And he was able to kind of keep it manageable on the way there because right. everything's like, it was hard. It was laborious, but the thrill of discovery and adventure was new and he was able to keep it manageable. But on the way back, like he was very irritable. He was not as able to keep his mental health as manageable on the way back. Right. And he even stole a canoe from someone, which again was like, it was went against the nature of their yeah. expedition. Like there was no, like their motto is do no harm.
Right. Right.
I saw this in a couple different things. I'm not entirely sure how it came out, but it was reported that Lewis's dog was stolen as well.
The dog.
Heard that he was able to get it back.
Okay.
It's most evidence points to yes.
Okay.
But nothing is definitive because he didn't write about his dog very often.
Okay. Well, so, in my heart, I'm saying he did.
I'd say there's like an 85% chance he got his dog back.
I like those odds.
And then, like, again, Lewis, you know, he was irritable. He started lashing out at his crew a lot. And he got really, really depressed. So it was a little harder to manage.
Right.
By May, they were back with the Nimiipuu tribe. And the Nimiipuu, they had become really good friends. And they treated them very kindly. They gave good. Them free food. I think the documentary said gave them horses to eat. No.
Oh, okay.
You do what you can, I guess. Yeah. But they were playing games together. Like, they each culture was, like, teaching each other their own games. They danced.
They needed that.
They really did. Yeah. Especially after being on just in rain for months and months and months.
Right.
And Yeah. So, and then the tribe elders of the Nimiipuu tribe pledged peace with the U.S. And they said, we will never go to war with the U.S. And they never did. Even with all the bullshit that was going on with the fucking
Trail of Tears?
Yeah, like the Trail of Tears went through the southern U.S. But like there were things that happened.
The Removal Act and stuff like that? Yeah, something
like the Indian Removal Act.
Yeah.
Like that was such bullshit.
That's pretty impressive that they kept their word through mm-hmm. all of that. That they were like, nope, we said we weren't going to, so we won't.
And if you think back to it, like they originally, when the Lewis and Clark expedition were making their way through, they were like, yeah, let's like kill them and steal all their stuff.
Right.
And there was one woman that was there, Watkuis. Mm. She was like, no, like, let's not attack them. Let's be friends with them. And they're like, okay. And then they were like best friends. So yay, Watkuis.
Yeah. Good on you.
Yeah. And they didn't mention it in the documentary, but I saw in other sources where they were with the Nimiipuu tribe and they were wanting to go ahead and start getting over the Bitter Rock Mountains, which is the area of the Rocky Mountains in Montana.
Yeah.
But there's too much snow. And they couldn't make it, so they had to double back and, like, wait a week or so for more of the snow to melt. And that was the only time they had to, like, backtrack in the entire expedition.
That's not bad.
I don't think so either. And it was only a week. Like, that's, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't that as bad as it could have been. And by June, the Nimiipuu helped them navigate back over the mountains.
Okay.
So I don't know if you have the skit up with the pictures.
Got it.
So do you see on the purple trail is their return trip?
Yes.
And you see where, like, in the Oregon country, it splits where Clark goes south and then Lewis goes north.
Yes.
So it's here where there's a fork between the Columbia and the Yellowstone River.
Okay.
I believe it's the Columbia and Yellowstone. Things were kind of going back and forth on that.
Yeah.
But they decided, okay, since we kind of missed all of this on our way up, because, like, they traveled through just marsh, basically, and, like,
yeah,
like the source water for the Missouri River. They're like, okay, did I say Columbia? I meant Missouri. I apologize. The Missouri and the Yellowstone River.
Yeah.
Clark was like, okay, we're going to, they separated into, like, four separate groups. So Clark and Lewis went their separate ways, and then they had groups that, like, Clark and his group, like, traveled on horseback, while one of their, they had a group that traveled along the river to kind of keep all their stuff. And then Lewis had the same thing where he had some people that went on horseback and then another little group that stayed on the river.
Okay.
And they just kind of, like, took some more notes. They saw some more things. Clark and his group, and he had Charbonneau, Sacagawea, their son, and a few other people. They had a great time. They were chill. They saw some rocks. They saw some mountains. There was a mountain structure that Clark named Pompey's Tower after Sacagawea and Charbonneau's son, who they called Little Pomp. And he actually carved his initials into the sandstone there. And it's still there.
Cool.
It's like the one of the only physical, like, remnants of their expedition left.
That is so cool. I bet it would be so cool to be the person to find that.
I know, right?
Like, are you kidding?
Yeah, that's crazy. So, yeah, they were just chill. Lewis, on the other hand, they went up around the Marias River, and they were in Blackfeet territory. And the Blackfeet Native Americans were the leading power in the region.
Yeah.
They were very aggressive. They weren't, you know, like, just all that war, but they had, there was a very strict power structure where they were on top. And a lot of the tribes that Lewis and Clark had encountered were below the Blackfeet. So Lewis and his party ran into a couple scouts from the Blackfeet tribe. And they met up and they're like, okay, you know, like, we'll just keep an eye on each other, but we'll be cool.
Right.
But then Lewis had to be like, oh, we're going to bring so much trade into the region and the Shoshones and the Hidatsas and the Mandans, like, they're all going to have all this trade and it's going to be great. And then the Blackfeet were like, you guys want to disrupt our entire power structure and our entire economy.
He had to open his mouth.
I know. He's just so, like, starry-eyed and just so happy. And he's like, these things are going to be great. And they're like, no, we don't want you to do that. So the scouting party, at some point in the night, try to steal their rifles and their horses. And a big brawl breaks out.
Right.
I think it was Juilliard. One of the men ended up stabbing a Blackfoot scout. And then Lewis shot another one of the warriors. And they died.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so the rest of the warriors left. And then Lewis and his group were like, we got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
There's going to be a war party seeking revenge.
Any minute.
Yeah. We got to GTFO. They rode for 24 hours straight without stopping.
So they rode on their horses. Where are the people in the boats at this point?
They're still on the river. There's like established rendezvous points.
Okay.
That they were going to meet at. Because they knew where the fork was. Because remember, they had made the decision.
Right.
Like, where to split up. But they didn't take the Missouri. They took the Marianas River.
Right. Okay. Back. Okay.
And then, like, eventually that would lead into the Missouri River. So.
Okay. Okay. Got it.
But yeah, they're on the river. They're sailing down. And I don't know, like, when they made it to like his canoe party made it to the rendezvous point. At some point, Lewis got shot. At some point, he was fine.
Okay.
But I think it was while they were. It was while they were hunting, but yeah, he just got over it. But when they rode for 24 hours straight, they went 120 miles in 24 hours on horseback. They got the fuck out of there.
I mean, definition GTFO. Like,
yeah.
They weren't, was it the Blackfoot you said?
The Blackfoot tribe, yeah.
The Blackfoot weren't catching up. It wasn't happening.
They were trying to put as much distance between them as possible.
They succeeded.
And this next part, this would be, you would see this in a movie and you'd be like, no, no, that's unrealistic. Literally, as Lewis and his party are riding up to the river, they see Clark's canoe party rounding the bend towards the rendezvous point. Like at the same time.
No. No, Hollywood, this is not, that does not happen.
It happened. Like, and Spain tried twice, which I'll get into in a little bit, but Spain tried this twice and couldn't do it. But somehow the expedition was able to do this.
I don't know what stars aligned to make this happen, but I'm glad. But think about it. Had they not rode that 24 hours straight, it wouldn't have, like,
yeah.
What?
They made great time. And literally, like, they rounded the bend in the canoes and they're like, go, go, go. They literally ditched the horses, got into the canoes, and they're like, let's go, let's go, let's go.
They onto their canoes horses? Down the river.
Yeah.
Oh.
They couldn't take them with them.
Well, I mean, I guess they're free now.
Yeah, free horses. So
That's crazy.
Lewis and Clark and all of the men, they meet up at the rendezvous point. And now they're back on the Missouri River and they are traveling with the current. So now they are, these men are so ready to go home.
They're hauling ass, I bet.
They are hauling ass. So about, give or take, their journey up, they average about 14 to 15 miles a day because they were traveling against the current of the Missouri River.
With all that shit with them.
Right. Like they had the I can't remember what it's called. I keep wanting to call it a towboat. It's not a towboat, but they had like a bigger boat and like some canoes. Another on the canoes traveling with. They're averaging 70 miles a day.
Good God.
Yeah. And they're just so ready to get home. So by August, they reached the Mandan tribe.
Okay.
Which I think before it had taken them like 4 months to get between the Nimiipuu and the Mandan tribe, where this time it took like a month, maybe two.
Damn.
So they are hauling ass. So they get there and John Coulter, who is part of the expedition, he parts ways. He's like, I don't want to go back home. The wilderness calls to me. So he joins some American fur trappers.
Calls me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one source I was reading, I don't remember which source it was, but they said that John Coulter would be terribly lonely in St. Louis. So.
Oh.
I know. I don't know what that meant. I assume that means that he didn't really have anyone waiting for him back home.
Maybe.
So he just was like, all right, I'm just going to keep being in the wilderness.
The wilderness is my family.
Yes. So he went with some fur trappers. Charbonneau, Sacagawea, and Jean-Baptiste, who's her son, also rejoined the Mandan tribe, parted ways. And they agreed that Jean-Baptiste would go live with Clark in like a year. I guess so he could be raised in like quote unquote proper society. I don't know.
That's so bizarre to me.
It's, yeah, it is weird. But I that was just the agreement they came to. And Clark was like, yeah, sure. He will be my ward, I guess. And a Mandan chief and his family joined them on the way back. So like a little exchanging here and there.
Okay.
And he was like, we want to go to the
U.S. Shuffle.
Yeah. So now they only spent 3 days at the Mandan tribe this time because they were ready to go.
Okay. Yeah.
And they're on their way. And eventually they encounter the Teton Sioux or the Lakota. And remember on their journey up, things were very tense. They did not really get along. Things didn't turn violent, but things could have.
Right.
And Black Buffalo, who's one of the chiefs that ended up defusing the situation the first time, he was like calling them or hailing them. And literally Clark gets up and is like yelling at him from the canoe, like, F you, you guys suck, y'all are assholes, we're not stopping. And they didn't stop at all. Like, they just kept going. I'm
imagining them just like floating by, he's yelling, everyone else is like flipping him on the bird. Yeah. Like,
and then Black Buffalo's like shrugging, like, what?
Like, what?
I saved y'all's asses last time.
Yeah, seriously. So I wasn't nice about it. Sorry.
Yeah. So, but they didn't stop. They just kept going. And like I mentioned, I kind of spoiled a little bit earlier. So remember the last episode, Spain was like, no, if these guys aren't navigating the Western Americas, like they're going to infiltrate Spanish territory and they're going to want to conquer Spanish territory, because Spanish territory went all the way up to like Montana.
Yeah.
And so Spain is trying to send intercept teams to like stop the expedition. So they missed the first time by a week.
A month.
I think it was a month.
A month. Okay.
I think you're right. It was like a month.
Yeah.
They tried again and they missed them again. Which, like, it's like trying to hit like a speck of dust by like Mars with a bullet, you know, like it's no way. It's impossible.
Yeah. Except earlier when Lewis and Clark found each other.
The bond between them is stronger than anything on truly any force of nature. So on their way back, they're booking it. The only real stop that they made besides to like camp for the night was at Floyd's grave. And Floyd was the man who had passed away from presumably appendicitis on the way up.
Okay.
He is the only person that passed away in this entire expedition.
That is freaking incredible that no one else died.
And it wasn't even from like starvation or like exposure or from like another tribe or anything. Yeah. It was from most likely appendicitis, which it's no one could have stopped.
Shackleton. Yeah. It's giving like those same vibes of just like doing impossible things. And then like the whole crew surviving, except for Floyd, of course. But
yeah, but you couldn't have planned for that.
No,
if he was like in a city in the U.S., like I doubt he could have been treated effectively.
Right. No. Appendicitis, I mean, kills people today. In modern 2004, like 2004, 2024. What year is it?
Oh my goodness. We just traveled back in time 20 years.
Make the sound, the time travel noise. Yeah. Oops.
All right. We're going to fast forward to 2024 and then backtrack to 1806.
Okay, I'm going to get time travel sickness. Should I put this car sick glasses on? You need to
put the glasses on.
Yeah.
So, the expedition, they're still making their way back. They start encountering more traders on their way back. And the traders are giving them, like, free supplies and goods and booze just for information.
Nice.
Because they just traveled all this way, and they're like, hey, what do I need to know? And they're like, oh, yeah, like, there's grizzly bears and friendly tribes and not friendly tribes. And they're like, here's whiskey. Thanks. They bye. Have
books and books and books of information.
Mm-hmm.
That's priceless.
Almost. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Worth a bunch of whiskey, apparently.
Yeah.
And they're also like talking with the traders, and they're like, oh yeah, like everyone thinks you're dead, you know, and they're like, but we're not dead. So like they're like getting closer and closer. Like they're just like, we got to get home. They are booking it. They literally start traveling nonstop. They don't even stop to hunt at this point. They're like, we got a couple snacks. Let's keep going. They traveled 120 miles in one day.
Holy fuck.
Yeah. Like, not even 24 hours, like, on horseback. In, like,
a normal one day.
One daylight cycle. They traveled 120 miles.
Holy shit.
They are.
And what month is this at this point? Where are we at?
It is like August, September.
Okay. Okay.
So I don't know specifically when. And then finally, they see a cow. And they're like, we are in domestic civilization.
What a glorious cow.
A cow.
A moo.
They literally start cheering. They're so excited. They're like, we're home. And by the, like, they enter into St. Louis, and everyone that can see that they're coming in gathers around and starts cheering as they pull into port. Aww. In St. Louis. Huge celebration. Huge party. So this is what's crazy, and I did the math. So when they left on their journey,
yeah,
back in 1804, it took them 6 months to get from St. Louis to the Mandan tribe.
Okay.
It took them 1 month to get back.
They were hauling. Like, I'm imagining, you know, those, like, row teams. They're all in,
oh,
like,
yeah.
sync. They're just.
But they're in handmade canoes from, like, yes. cottonwood trees.
Like, imagine. These men. Lewis and Clark, like, on the front, just being like, row, row, row.
And these men, they are haggard. Like, they have not bathed in, like, 2 years. Their beards are probably by their knees. They're in, like, handmade leather that they hunted themselves. They're probably all skinny as hell because they've only been eating elk for, like, a year.
Oh, my God.
It is crazy. But they make it back home. Yes. So my next section is titled Just Rewards. We're getting close to the end. So everyone fucking partied, especially the expedition. They, you know, they were done. They completed. They succeeded in this amazing expedition.
Wow.
So on their way back, so they're traveling from St. Louis to Washington, D.C. And every city they stopped in threw, like, the biggest fucking party for them. Like, senators and government officials and, like, town leaders were just like, fucking party. And they did. One senator said that it was as if they had returned from the moon. Which is super ironic because in the PBS documentary I watched, they kept comparing this expedition to, like, the moon landing.
Uncharted territory. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. So they get to D.C. Congress is like, y'all did such a good job. We're paying you double. Which was great.
Nice.
And all of the men were rewarded 320 acres of land.
Like, wherever they wanted?
I assume.
Wouldn't it be a bitch if they're like 320 acres in your newfound territory?
Go to Montana.
Go back.
No, I think it was like if there were 320 acres to claim, they could claim whatever land they wanted. Okay. Because one guy went to like New Hampshire, I think. And then Lewis and Clark each got 1,600 acres because they were like the captains and the leaders and stuff.
Right. Nice.
So they get back, and Lewis, who again is Jefferson's personal secretary, they meet up, and no one really knows what happened in this meeting. Neither of them wrote about it, and it's not like there's video cameras. But there's one report that they got, like, they were on their hands and knees on the floor looking at, like, maps and stuff.
That's Lewis exactly was, like, what explaining I would be doing. Everything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely.
So after they get their rewards, everyone goes their separate ways. John Ordway, who his journals were used a lot in a documentary I watched. Mm-hmm. He went to New Hampshire, got married, settled his land. Cool. Happy life. Yeah. Joseph Whitehouse, he was another man who had a journal that was used extensively. He reenlisted in the army for the War of 1812, but then deserted and disappeared forever. Don't know what happened to him.
He gone.
Yeah. Several other crew members went back out west, but three were killed by Blackfeet natives, including George Juilliard. And Coulter, who remember, like, separated at the Mandan tribe, he narrowly escaped being killed in this specific attack.
Oh.
Wandered hundreds of miles naked and alone and stumbled onto what would be known as Yellowstone.
The OG Naked and Afraid.
Yes.
Yes. Why was he naked?
He was in the wilderness. Maybe his clothes fell off. Maybe he ate them. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But he was found naked. And he had wandered like hundreds of miles, like just surviving off the land. And when he was found, he was talking about like this land that was covered in smoke and steam, and pillars would like jut out at you. And it was very hostile. And people were like, oh, LOL, this crazy man will call this like Coulter's Hell or whatever. But it was Yellowstone. Like, he was telling the truth. He wasn't just, like, shell-shocked from surviving in the woods for months.
Please tell me they still refer to it as Coulter's Hell.
I actually don't know. I've never been to Yellowstone.
So. I haven't either. We should go.
If we go, we need to look at and see if there's any memorial or statue for Coulter. Because, oh my God. I can't imagine, like, stumbling into Yellowstone with not even naked. A shirt on your back. Like, people die. Like, people still die there. Like, there's very specific trails you have to walk on. If you fall off, you will die. Like, you'll boil alive. Your skin will fall off. You'll be eaten by bacteria, whatever.
I don't think I want to go to Yellowstone anymore.
Well, just don't. You have to stay on the path.
And be clothed.
Yeah. And be clothed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, don't fall off the path.
Okay.
Alexander Willard, who was another person, he went off to California. Another guy named Patrick Gass, he was pretty young in expedition. His journal was used a lot as well. He lived until 1870.
Holy shit.
He was 99 years old when he died.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
He lived as long as Betty White.
He did. He lost an eye in the War of 1812. And I just thought this was like super patriotic when the Civil War broke out, because again, he's alive when the Civil War broke out in 64 65. When he was 90, he volunteered for the Union Army because he wanted to fight for his country.
What a sweetheart. But sir, go back to bed.
You're 90, you don't have to fight anymore.
You don't have to.
You already lost an eye in
we got it, man.
Yeah, you're good. So This one has some mixed feelings. So York, who was enslaved by Clark, he continued his life as an enslaved man for several years after the expedition. Mm-hmm. He kept asking Clark over and over and again. He was like, come on, man. Like, I literally went with you that whole way. I survived everything that you did. Don't I deserve my freedom? And Clark was like, but I need you. Like, I can't let go of you. You know, just all that kind of stuff.
Did he get anything?
So, not monetarily, no.
Okay.
Like, he didn't get the payment from Congress.
Bullshit.
He really didn't get anything. A few years later, I think it was like 5 years later, Clark finally did say yes. And good. York was freed. He went into business in, like, the Tennessee and Kentucky areas, but nothing is really known about him after that. It's suspected he may have died from cholera about 20 years later, but I don't know how old he was.
I'm glad he was freed, but I have a lot of feelings about that.
Yeah, like, begging.
A lot of feelings.
Begging another person to not be property anymore
is sickening.
Yeah. Sacagawea. Yes. She remained with Toussaint Charbonneau, who's her husband, and traveled to St. Louis with him whenever they did that. In 1812, she gave birth to a daughter, but unfortunately succumbed to fever shortly thereafter.
Oh.
So she passed away not long after. And then Clark took custody of Sacagawea's children, like sort of adopted them.
But like, where's the father? In...
I don't know.
Well, I mean, he was kind of useless, so.
He did translations.
He did translations. Okay.
Yeah.
He nearly flipped the boat with all the notes in it.
Yeah. So I don't know. But
yeah, okay.
Clark took their children as his wards, and he married Judith Hancock, who he had when they were discovering all these new rivers and stuff, he had named a river after her.
Oh, so, sweet.
Yeah, he had been sweet on her for a while. So they got married, they had some children, and they kept
okay. Well, at least Jean. Little Pomp was well taken care of.
Yeah. After he got married, they moved to St. Louis, and he continued as a liaison between Native tribes and the U.S. government, and was so good at his job, in 1822, he was given the official title Superintendent of Indian Affairs.
They gave him, they made a position for him.
Basically, yeah. Because he, before he even left on his expedition, he had a lot of really good relationships with Native peoples.
Yeah.
And they got better during the expedition and continued to get better afterwards. So he was really good friends with a lot of Native peoples. And even petitioned for better treatment of Native Americans as U.S. settlers were starting to travel west and conflicts were starting to arise of settlers taking over land that had already been claimed by tribes, you know, all of that. And he was so good at his job, he continued to be reappointed in this position by every successive president until Clark died.
Wow. Holy shit. Tell me you're good at your job without telling me you're good at your job.
Right. William Clark died September 1st, 1838, when he was 69 years old, in the home of his oldest son, Meriwether Lewis Clark.
Aww.
Which I thought was just, like, really sweet that his oldest son is named after his best friend.
So, like, if I were to have another daughter, should I name her, like, Morgan, Corey, Sarah Lou? Like, squish them all together?
Yeah, that's a perfect name.
You should do Morgan, that. Corey, Sarah Lou. Just one name.
Morgan, Corey, Sarah Lou. Yeah. Yes. Do that. That's the perfect, most beautiful name I've ever heard.
Thank you.
All right. This next part we're going to get into is a bummer.
Okay.
There's going to be a trigger warning for self-harm and suicide. So if you do not feel like listening to this, you can skip forward a few minutes.
Before we get too far, I want to say there is a suicide hotline. And in the United States, that number is 988. So if you feel like you need that, call 988. There are people there to help.
Yes, please, if you feel like you need help, you're not a burden. People want to help you. So please take advantage of that resource. So after everyone got back, Lewis, his mental health really started to worsen.
Yeah.
He was given a new position of governor of the Louisiana Territory, like all of this unexplored territory. He was made governor of it by Jefferson, which I'm sure to Jefferson it was a huge honor.
Yes.
But I don't think Lewis could really handle it. So Lewis relocated to St. Louis. He really struggled with finding a partner.
Okay.
He like tried several times to woo women, was unsuccessful, so he never married. He started getting into debt. And a big thing that kind of was a driving wedge between Jefferson and Lewis was Lewis was expected to write a manuscript about their trip, about their expedition. Because everything was like in journals and notes and stuff. But Jefferson wanted like one kind of manuscript and book to where all the information was. So because there were like several journals that he had to use, all their notes and stuff. And Lewis was not able to do this. He procrastinated on it. He just really, really struggled with it. And Jefferson was getting really frustrated with Lewis and his lack of follow through.
Yeah.
So that started, Jefferson started like pushing away a little bit, started withdrawing from the friendship, which didn't help Lewis's mental health. And Lewis really struggled with the responsibilities as governor. And there were disputes between, again, like settlers, between settlers and other settlers, between settlers and tribes. And he was ignoring these disputes. He was not working to settle these at all. Lewis started drinking very heavily. He started taking opium and morphine to treat symptoms of malaria that he had contracted. And his depression continued to get worse. And again, like he had already struggled with depression and his entire family seemed to have a history of it. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was really, really bad. And in 1809, there were starting to be allegations from Washington that Lewis was misusing funds. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was like embezzling or inappropriate, like sanctioning. If I don't know. I don't know what it was, but he was being accused of misappropriating funds. And so he was like, okay, well, I got to go clear my name. I got to travel to DC.
Yeah.
Before he left, Lewis wrote out a will that he gave to Clark, which that's kind of a red flag.
Yeah.
Like, he's just going to handle this dispute, but he's given his best friend a will.
Yeah, sus.
It's kind of a red flag.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Lewis is on a boat. I think he may have been with a couple of friends. I'm not sure exactly who was on this boat. But while on this boat, traveling down to Mississippi, Lewis attempted suicide. He was stopped. The crew members intervened. They kept him under watch.
Wow.
And he eventually made his way to the Natchez Trace, which is in Tennessee, to start his travel to D.C.
Yeah.
He ended up at a small inn outside of Nashville. I think it's called the Grinder Inn. Mrs. Grinder, who was the proprietor, said that she heard him arguing with himself in his room. Loudly arguing with himself and, pacing the floors back and forth. And then at some point he just stopped and he sat on the front porch and watched the sunset. Other accounts say that he kept saying that Clark was going to be there. Clark was going to show up. Clark was not going to be there. So at one point that evening after the sunset, he asked one of his friends to lay down a buffalo robe. I don't know if that's like a robe made out of buffalo skin or if it's just like a big piece of mm-hmm. pelt. I'm not sure. And told people that Clark would be coming soon. And that evening, Lewis died by two gunshot wounds, one in the head and one in the chest. It is highly suspected it was by suicide, but it's not 100% sure because there's two. But based on what the historian said, it looks like maybe in one hand he held a gun to his head and then another one to his heart and maybe pulled him at the same time.
Just to, yeah.
Yeah. Very, very unfortunate. And Meriwether Lewis died that night outside Nashville, Tennessee. And his grave is still there. It's in Hohenwald, mm-hmm. Tennessee. So Lewis never left that area. His grave is still there. And bringing it back to his dog. Mm-hmm. Again, no one really knows what happened to the dog. There are some rumors that his dog was with him that night.
Aww.
And wouldn't leave his grave. I'm not sure. I just thought that was very sad. But there's no firm evidence that this happened. It's just a rumor.
That's so sad.
It's very sad. This is a very, very sad ending to everything.
Yeah.
But I thought, this is my last little note. All in all, thinking about, so they originally expected this journey would take between 18 to 24 months.
Right.
Lewis and Clark did. They completed it in 28 months.
That's not bad.
They were only off by 4 months.
And 40 miles.
The journey to the Pacific took 18 months.
Yeah.
They spent 4 months waiting out the winter, and it only took them 6 months to get back home.
Damn. Damn.
They fucking booked it. But yeah.
That's incredible.
And because of their expedition, people started making their way out west, manifest destiny and all that.
Yeah. And the eventually rest is history.
The rest is history, which we may cover at some point.
I'm sure we will.
The next several, the next 100 years is bloody history for sure.
It's kind of ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not good.
There's a lot.
But it's still important.
It is very important. Like the post I made the other day, it is very important to remember all parts of history, whether it's good or bad. We can learn mm-hmm. things from it. And it's just because you don't like to hear it doesn't mean it's not important. So
right,
we try to stick to the funnier bits, though, or the lighter bits, or the adventure and stuff like that.
Yeah, I will say my next episode is none of those things. It is going to be kind of a sad one.
Oh, no.
I know.
Well,
it was buzzing in my head, and then I heard it mentioned on one of my favorite podcasts. And I was like, all right, I guess I'm doing it. It's my sign from the universe.
It is a sign from the universe. I got lots of signs, lots of inspiration on my trip this past weekend. Nick and the kids and I went to Dallas for the eclipse because my uncle lives out there. So we're like, might as well. They're in totality. So, but on the way, I thought it was funny. It was my turn to drive, and I passed a sign that said Natchez Trace, like Parkway or something like that on the way over there. And I was like, how weird is it that we were just talking about that the other day, in the deleted file. We had already talked about it once, and that I happened to pass it days later.
Right.
It's so weird.
That is very weird. That's very weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I got for Lewis and Clark. My source, I don't have a whole lot of sources, but my biggest one that I use is a PBS documentary from 1997 called Lewis and Clark, The Journey of the Core of Discovery. There's a Lewis and Clark website, lewisandclark.org. I got some stuff from. There's also lewis-clark.org.
Okay.
I got a little bit of information about the dog.
Oh.
There's an article by James J. Holmberg called Seaman's Fate. One of the suspected names of the dog was Seaman. There's also, it was like Scannon or something. I don't know. And then I read an article from 1994 by Charles G. Clark from the Oregon Historical Quarterly called The Roster of the Expedition of Lewis and Clark. And that's where they're like, we don't know how many people were actually on this expedition, but this is our guess. And we think it's about 45, but we don't know.
Yeah, give or take.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it.
Cool. Well, thank you for that. That was wonderful. I still can't believe it took us so long to cover it.
I know. I was very surprised. I was like, wait, we haven't covered Lewis and Clark yet. And it just popped in my brain. I was like, I guess we'll do that now.
Yeah. Well, it's like the Betty White episode. It's been sitting on that list for a year now, and we just hadn't done it yet.
Yeah.
History is endless well.
It is. That's why we decided to do a history podcast, so we would never run out of ideas.
Literally never.
That was literally like when we were, because we came up with wanting to do a podcast before we nailed down what we wanted to talk about.
Right.
We were just like, we just want more excuses to like hang out.
Exactly.
And like share how hilarious we are with the world.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe we could just like cover topics that are interesting to us. And like, we were just kind of figuring out. Emily was like, why don't we just do a history podcast and then we can talk about whatever we want because everything's history. And I was like, you are a genius. So
it's only sometimes.
That's why. Yeah. And she came up with the name of the podcast. So two for two.
While Emily, you were gone to get hot dog buns, I was like brainstorming, and I was like, she walked through the door and I was like, I've got it. What do you think?
Of ill-equipped history. And I was like, that hasn't been taken yet, right?
No.
She's like, and we like were like Googling and like looking up other, because we've come up with a few and we're like, ah, it's close to like an already existing history podcast. And I was like, this is perfect. And then it wasn't taken. We're like, yes.
That night we made our Gmail account. We signed up for Podbean, and yeah.
Was it that same night that we commissioned our theme song?
Yes, where we sat in, because I had already bought the desk and the microphone and everything, and we sat in my closet, crammed in there, listening to 1980s Japanese, what?
Synthetic. Like city
pop,
like city rock or city pop city, or something.
It was synthetic something. We fell down the rabbit hole, and then
we really did, because one of my really good friends, one of our really good friends, her husband has like, he can write music and do all that stuff, and I was like, hey, could he write us the theme song? And I messaged him and he was like, yeah, tell me what you want. And so our initial thought was like the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do with like a flute and like the snares. And
it turns out we don't like how those sound.
Yeah, because we were listening.
Intense.
Yeah, because he was like, why don't you guys just like come up with some examples and send them to me and then we can figure something out. And so we like were listening to those things, like we don't really like that. And I don't even know how we got into this. I think it just popped up on YouTube and we're like, let's listen to this. And we both listened to it and we were like jamming.
Yeah.
And we're like, we like this. And so we sent him like four or five videos. We're like, this is the sound we want. And he was like, really? What?
Yeah. And did we do the photo shoot before we did the music? Did we do first?
I don't know. We did the music first because then we're like when we'd scheduled the photo shoot not for the podcast, but like we could also use this because the music turned out kind of 80s. And then
we were just like, doing photo shoot for funsies.
Yeah, and we're like, hey, we could also use this for the podcast. Because that's just...
I just love that.
We just wanted to do
we're
it.
We're just doing shit.
Yeah, like Emily sent me a TikTok. She's like, let's do this. And I was like, okay.
We got it scheduled. She came into town. Like the photo shoot where we were Indiana Jones, that was put together in 3 days.
Yeah.
3 days.
We're like, let's just do this. And we're like, I don't even, I'm sure you came up with the idea. And I was like,
yeah. I was in the shower.
I'm coming into town anyway.
It was a shower thought. I don't know. I think I texted you while I was still in the shower. I was like, I have
probably
to send this out before I forget.
Yeah, because I think I went like the next day because I was getting stuff for a Halloween costume. And I was like, oh, I also need to get a hat for the Indiana Jones photo shoot.
And I immediately text my sister-in-law and was like, can you take pictures this weekend?
And it turned out so good. I still love looking at them. She's amazing.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, that's our backstory.
Yeah. shout out to Tango Studios.
Yes. Yeah. Tango Studios for writing our intro and exit, intro and outro songs.
Yeah.
We still I'm still jamming to our intro.
Every time I play it and like the kids are in the car, which my son says he is the official podcast like reviewer. So if I play our podcast in the car, he will give me thumbs up, thumbs down, or like a middle ground for sections of the podcast. He's like, I don't know about this one. I like this part. But my daughter's in the back like shimmying, doing like a dance to the intro, and I'm like, yeah. She says it's do, 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 do.
Yeah. Do, do, do. Tango Studios did an amazing job.
Yeah. Should we do socials?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, like, okay. We can stop talking about ourselves and
never
end this thing. No,
we won't. Facebook.
Ill-Equipped History Podcast Group and Page. Look how smoothly I did that. I'm very proud of myself.
Instagram.
At Ill-Equipped History.
TikTok.
At Ill-Equipped History.
Gmail.
illequippedhistory@gmail.com
and
patreon.com/illequippedhistory, where for $5 a month you can get access to bonus episodes and a sticker.
I think that's
we may have another sticker coming out soon.
Yes, I did show one other person, and I showed Drew, and he was like, I want it. So I was like, okay. And also, guys, if you could shout us out, Tell your friends and family about us. That would be awesome. That'll get us higher in the ratings and get us new listeners.
Leave reviews.
Yeah, leave reviews. We love hearing from y'all. And, you know, I guess when you're ready to get home, travel 70 miles a day by canoe.
Or 120.
Or 120. And if you
when you're really ready to get home.
When you piss off a native tribe, ride for 24 hours straight. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
Easy peasy.
Lemon squeeze. Or maybe just don't piss off native tribes.
Yeah. Keep your mouth shut. That's the moral of the story. Learn when to keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great skill to have.
Don't overshare like I do.
Not everyone has to know the thought that's in your brain all the time.
And if you have, if you're in a situation where you're nervous, don't lock your car and make it awkward.
I mean, if you fear for your safety, definitely lock your car.
Yeah.
But while you're in the car with your doors closed.
It doesn't help if you're standing there with the door open, making eye contact and locking the door.
Oh boy.
So stupid. My brain panics.
Silly goose. Just goosing.
Just goosing. That's all I am. Just goosing.
Oh man.
K-bye.
K-bye.